Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm in the studio with my co-host on the right, Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
And on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
Guys, I want to start out by talking about women in elected office.
Yes.
And we're going to go right to, I'm going to quote the co-founder of Republican Women for Progress. She's quoted in the New York Times saying, "We've told a lot of women don't run this year." And then she goes on to say, "We've told them you're a great candidate in any other year you would win, but not this year." What is going on, Dan?
Whoa. I don't even know what that means. Unpackaging that quote. Why? Okay.
Why are the Republicans saying don't run, women, but the Democrats are doing well in the midterms, and there seems to be something sort of going on here?
Moderate. So her effort is to keep moderate female Republicans out of races? This just seems stupid.
I'm glad you agree with me.
Now, I'm not saying they should win. That's a whole. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, that kind of quote. I don't know. Honestly, Natalie, Jim, you've got to have something because I'm reeling.
No, I heard her defense of it, by the way, and she said, "Look, we don't want to discourage a bunch of women. Women are going to lose this year, and we don't want to take a whole crop of young Republican or first timers and get them out there when you have a president of the United States, the president of the United States calling a woman a dog, and that kind of attack. There is going to be a tidal wave." Against this
he
pig in the White House.
See, look, and you can call men pigs. I'm a little bit.
If I were the president of the United States,
I'm a little bit confused, Jim.
If I was the president, I wouldn't do that.
So gay men can call people names in the White House, but straight men can't call women names from. I am so confused.
The president
today.
Of the United States may not call a political.
Let's not
opponent.
Refer to any political figures.
No, it matters.
All, as animals
it
at all.
Matters. It matters.
Civility, Jim. Let's
I think
come
to me the tricky thing is
and I was making a joke. The president was serious.
If I'm a leader in the Republican Party and have some outstanding women candidates, I want them out there. I want people seeing them.
Yeah.
I want people to have the chance to vote on them. And, you know, I tend to agree with Jim that the president is, not a great leader for women. And that's why I want women out there to give them a contrast, give them someone else to support.
But we don't need lapdog women, so to speak, perhaps.
Whoa.
I know the wrong thing to say in this case. We need women that'll stand up and say, "Mr. President, you should never do that again. Mia Love, where are you?"
Yeah.
Oh, no. I knew that. So I was like, how does he get to Mia? Oh, that's how you
there you
it.
Go.
I'm just going to say, I'll say this. Statistics show you have to lose your first election to get to your second election for a win. So I look at this and say, you know what? If you lost, you got a lot of name recognition mm-hmm. got out of it. You got, you know, and you lose a lot, you win a lot as a candidate, even if you lose with the knowledge, the street mm-hmm. experience.
If you
all
run a great
things,
campaign.
You run a good campaign. So
yeah.
I look at this and I think this is kind of hogwash.
Also,
Natalie, run for office.
Also this week, we had the three-digit suicide hotline bill advance. This is something that Hatch and Chris Stewart supported. Trump signed it. Congress got something done, guys.
Okay. I get it. Everybody wants to give Senator Hatch something, and they want to give Congress something. I get it. Steve Elison, Representative Steve Elison, and Senator Dan Thatcher had this idea for 611. They ran the bill at the state level, and the feds said, "No, wait. We need to probably do something at the federal level." And so it just shows that when Republicans have great ideas at the state level, the federal government should follow suit where it is their stewardship. And this is one where taking the 611 number and making it a suicide hotline is long overdue. And I think personally it is going to be an amazing contribution to the state and to the country now because of Senator Hatch. And I can point to two state legislators who I'm very proud of.
Good. Glad
well
you gave him
said,
credit.
Exactly.
Yeah, glad you gave him credit. One more thing with Trump. He's revoked CIA Director John Brennan's security clearance.
Why did he have clearance? Sorry. I'm really wired today. I'll step back from the mic.
I just can't imagine working in this White House. I saw a tweet today.
Why does John Brennan
saying,
have security?
We want to see the nondisclosure agreements that everyone's signing. Why aren't those public documents? Let's see them. You know, and I'm just sort of like, and then you got recordings coming into the White House. And then, you know, Trump's got other people in mind to revoke their security clearance. What? Can you imagine the lack of trust? This is violating every principle of like leadership, team building, you know, running an excellent operation that I can think of.
I'm speechless.
Every week it's something new.
So I just look at where we are with this conversation. I can understand the confidentiality agreements because it is tough when you're a president and you are constantly, you know, trying to put out fires outside the administration. It's even tougher, I think, to continue fighting those fires within the administration, secondarily to the fights to the fires that you started with your own within your own administration. So I think that is a tough management style. But Trump appears to have done well with it professionally, and so he's taking it to the White House,
Dan,
right?
I just say that the private sector is a completely different animal. You're in the service of the public.
I'm not disagreeing.
20 years as a political appointee.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, it's only like the last five that you're in sort of a more senior role or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I never saw anything that I thought was unseemly or something that, you know, I couldn't disclose, you know, after the fact, talking about it, whatever. I mean, you just, when you operate with a sense of honor and goodwill and commitment to the people you serve, you don't need non-disclosure agreements.
Can I step back and
in
just,
public life. I get them totally, in private.
I'm totally with you. I think President Trump made a common political figure mistake. Generally, what happens, and the temptation is, when you get elected, it is to turn and look at your campaign staff who got you through the election and to look at them and say, how could they fill these roles? Because they've done a phenomenal job on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
And a common mistake by elected officials is to think that you'd have the same people. You could bring those same people along. And I have rarely actually seen that work out. And this is just, you've seen it in the first 2 years of this White House. They have constantly been shedding campaign staff that came along. And I think Trump has figured out what you just pointed out, which is government is a different animal than private sector. And working together and collaborating in those kinds of things in a government situation is different than it is on a private sector. Right, Natalie?
Yeah, Jim, I'm with you. Jim, let's hear you speak.
Look, it's craziness. You want to be successful as a politician, you say thank you to your campaign people. You say submit an application and going in, you say, if you're doing this for a job, I'm sorry.
I agree.
When I was elected Democratic Party chair, which admittedly is not president, so that we had six or seven positions, I looked around. I went after the guy who'd organized the competition. There was a lot of people that said, we don't want that gay guy. This is wrong. We never heard of him. It'll be the worst choice. It'll be terrible. His name was Matt Lyon, and I saw how good he was at organizing. I called him to breakfast. I said, Matt, I want you to run it. And you know what? You're professional. I will interview everybody, but you're going to decide all those six or seven staff people. And Democrats are frantic because those are the only things we have. That's the way you got to do it, I think. You get the best people you can get, or you're going to be a failure if you get a bunch of political hacks.
Yeah, the campaign ends and governing begins.
And that is an important distinction.
But with this president, it's a permanent campaign, so...
Yeah, and in that way, maybe that's the case. But President Obama was no different. I mean, he had Axelrod and I'm forgetting his name, Mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, on staff as well, right?
And
they didn't last long, and they burned out.
And
right?
they went, President Obama was a stickler. You look at his people; there just weren't scandals in his presidency.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus and Representative Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about Utah's biggest political donors. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
It's Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Let's talk about a incredibly interesting Salt Lake Tribune story by Lee Davidson, where he Tribune staff had gone through and looked at all of the biggest political donors for this election cycle. Top of the list, the CEO of Entrada, Dave Bateman.
Yeah.
I don't know this person. The company Entrada, What is that company, Dan?
So Entrada is a competitor with like Yardi in real estate. We so large real estate companies who manage large apartment complexes or storage units, whatever, they need something to keep track of rent rolls and who to bill and that kind of thing.
Software.
Entrada does it. Entrada is software for rent roll management.
So Dave Bateman has donated over $775,000 to block Count My Vote and save the GOP from bankruptcy. Wow.
He went in and bought out the Utah Republican Party. It's that simple. That's what he did. He wrote out his check and he said, this party belongs to me. And that's what's happened. It's that simple.
I don't know if that's the case. So 4 years ago, when the whole Count My Vote thing was going on, 2 years previous, I think it was 2012, when the concerted effort by the establishment, there's no better term than establishment Republicans.
Mainstream.
But mainstream makes it sound like it's a political ideology. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's necessarily what divided it. It was just kind of the haves within the party who had money and were consistent donors. They decided they weren't going to donate to the party anymore, which created
debt.
For their own good reasons, right? Yeah, I'm not going to question their reasons. But what it did was it created a vacuum. And it made an opportunity for somebody who was willing to step in. And honestly, Dave has stepped up and helped the party out in a lot of ways. And, litigation costs, et cetera. I wish it was all behind us, but here we are. I mean, this is where it's at.
It's the Republican Party. It's for sale. You write out a $700,000 check, it's your party. They will take your lawsuits on infinitum, even though it's ripping the party apart. I mean, this is a problem.
I'm in the political middle on this one. Won't surprise anyone, but I really value corporate citizenship. Yeah. I value when people with means come in and help support things. And there's a voice that Bateman's representing. You can imagine Jim Wine saying this because I'm incredibly proud of what Gail Miller's done. At $522,000 that she's donated to Count My Vote, Our Schools Now, and to both Republican and Democratic candidates, I love that she is engaged and uses her substantial wealth to make this community better.
Can I bring up through the list here. But something happened in the legislature this week.
I just feel like I'm conflicted if I say, I like what Gail's doing, but, I don't like what Dave Bateman's doing. So I'm in the political middle. I'm okay. I don't think the Republican Party is necessarily for sale. I just think disclosure. And so we can all make our own judgments here. Is Gail looking after the community interest or self-interest?
Okay,
Bateman looking after community interest or self-interest?
I'm just going to highlight that if you have $1 billion, right, just in your back pocket, and you were to invest it at today's rate and all you got was cost of living, that's $30 million, right? So bless Gail's heart and bless Dave Bateman's heart, they're really not even putting in a full rounded 1% into what their deal is. So my hat's off to them, because without people contributing to the political process, whether it be small dollar donors or large dollar donors, it is impossible for candidates to help out, to get their message out.
But it's disgusting and despicable what happens in the way the state raises money. Let me give you an example. In the special session, last time, we did a special tax break for manufacturers and for internet portals and mining companies. And today I asked in our Tax and Rev Committee meeting, the chairman of the Tax Commission, who got that money? Which companies? He said, we can't say that. We're prohibited by state law to say. So these $500, no, because some states allow that.
Oh.
And especially on the sales tax, it's not even an issue.
Oh, okay.
It's so appearing before us are these $500 an hour lawyers representing mysterious manufacturers in Utah that are going to make $80 million from the taxpayer, and we're not allowed to know, because it's secret, who exactly is going to benefit from that. Give me a break. That has got to end, and that is the great cesspool of Utah politics. It is all of this money that all of these corporations in particular are getting on the dark.
Yeah. Well, there's a natural transition from the Dave Bateman and Gail Miller contributions to the Count My Vote issue. This week, the Count My Vote petitioners had their day in the Utah Supreme Court.
Oh, and the natural transition is that both the largest share of both of their monies were in on different sides of
keep
that issue.
Keep my voice okay. or count my vote. Is
I just
right?
wanted the voters. I just wanted everybody listeners listening to us to understand why
there was that transition. Okay. Well, so there. So it's heard in this week in the Utah Supreme Court. I went to this, and I have never been to a Utah Supreme Court proceeding
yeah.
before.
Yeah.
So everything was new to me. The way they have you stand up and recognize the justices as they come in, the U.S. flag, the state flag there, the pitchers of water, the the clock for how much time they have. I was proud of our state and of our republic as I was there. The rule of law looms large.
How did it? Okay, glad to hear that. I got my hand over. Salute. Who won, Natalie? We should describe what the issue's about.
Well, it's really about the Count My Vote people want to see preserve, through initiative petition, a dual path to the ballot. So you can get on the ballot both through signatures and through the caucus convention system. That is the law of the land, and they want to cement that.
And just in a broader demonstration, it's really about who should decide how initiatives get on the ballot. Should it be totally up to the legislature, or should
or is
people
there some
have,
constitutional
or is there some
burden?
Other...
And that's the question really the courts were hinging on is there some constitutional burden? And if there is, what should the standard be for deciding what is a constitutional burden and what isn't? And it seemed like, Natalie, you were there. I just went back and kind of was – I actually listened to the audio. This is how big a nerd I am.
Wow.
I went back and listened to the
was
audio.
Was it live?
They have recordings of, oh, okay, of, cool. of the process.
Oh, interesting.
And so – but it was really, really interesting.
Wasn't
from
it,
a
though?
From a policy nerd to listen to the judges kind of mire into that
yeah.
issue. It's been
so for our listeners, everything evolved around Article 6, Section 1, if I've got this right. And it's the part of the Utah Constitution that gives citizens the absolute right to petition – the government through an initiative, to basically make law.
Right.
But then it gives the Utah legislature the power to set the parameters. So the whole tug of war was between the constitutional right and the parameter set by the legislature. And is there an undue burden placed on the initiative folks? Because put simply, you set a limit. You have to get 10% of the voting public in the last presidential election in 26 of 29 Senate districts. So there's some standard. But after you turn in the signatures, the opposition has 30 days to go get signatures off. They have the names now, and they can go pull people off. And so by pulling off like 3,000 signatures, you can offset the will of what was like 130,000 signatures. Dan, am I getting the numbers about right?
Dude, I'm impressed.
I think it was
something like
100
this.
In one of the Senate districts. So it would even be worse. It would be 300 people.
So, yeah, I mean, and so – The grand scheme and one of the questions that was most informative to me was who owns their signature, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does the voter, once they've written their signature, is that final, or do they have the ability to withdraw their signature? And that was an interesting banter.
It's an individual right or a collective right?
Yeah, it was super.
It was way over my head, Jim. But there was a justice, the female justice on the Supreme Court, Paige Peterson. I was so impressed with her. I was so happy to see her represented there. She asked a lot of interesting questions. She said, when you place a vote, you don't get to go back and change it. You have to weigh the evidence and place your vote. She's like, why are we giving people the ability to pull their name off once they put it on?
Hmm.
Doesn't this just feed into, special interest politics?
Yeah.
So that was – I thought that was quite insightful for her to push that issue.
She will be the lone dissenter. If I was to bet today, it goes 4-1 and Count My Vote is not – just
I'm a little more optimistic than that, but,
just
but it might be 2-3.
Yeah.
So they've got to get thousands of signatures from each of the Senate districts. Then they have a closing day. The legislature, which hates initiatives, they just hate having the people decide what they think they ought to be doing. The legislature said then anybody can go back and change their mind if they signed the petition. So then the people that are against it look through and see which Senate district got the least number of votes. Then they send their swarms of people down there and have people take their name off. So the question is, does that break the spirit of the Constitution? And in my mind, it's not even close.
The attorney for Count My Vote said, "We just this established the playbook. to stop us from ever having an initiative petition.
And that's okay with the legislature.
Yeah, yeah. Because you turn in the signatures, and now they know all the names of who signed it, and now they go door to door and say whatever they want to pull those signatures off. And the Count My Vote people never have a chance to go recover. So there's no standard set, right? It's a moving target for the petitioners. I don't know. I will say this, that Utah voters overwhelmingly support the dual path. There is no question in my mind about that. The other thing is there's no question in my mind that the legislature's absolutely conflicted. Okay? I don't mind the legislature not liking ballot things on medical marijuana and whatnot, but on how people are elected, they are conflicted. And so this deserves to be on the ballot. And I hope our Supreme Court will see in practice we got a problem.
Or we'll put it on the ballot to impeach them all.
Wow.
Guys, I'm spent.
Why
because
not go
that
big,
was
Jim?
That was a tough one for me. Jim, let's talk about Amazon. You had is that okay if we move on from Count My Vote?
Oh yeah. I will just add, and I apologize for the prediction, but I think appropriately the judges are reticent to get into the middle of what is appropriate in the initiative process. Mm-hmm. And a reason I think they are is because there's no standard.
Mm-hmm.
Judges and the law, we like for there to be a standard, mm-hmm. you know, the reasonable person standard or mm-hmm. a negligence standard. We've spent generations defining what those terms mean. And without those standards, we can't have the same awe and respect for the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I believe this will lose, not because I agree or disagree with anybody on either side of it, but I think it will lose because I don't think, to Count My Vote's mistake, they did not offer the judge a standard by which they could hang their hat on why. It's the same reason why gerrymandering fails at the Supreme Court. Everybody keeps saying, well, gerrymandering and the courts need to do something. Yes, and something needs to be done. The problem is what?
Yeah.
And how do you law define it?
For the listeners, we should know the answer to this before the end of the month because Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has to sign off on the ballot. So we'll know the answer to this real soon. Let's see if Dan's right.
You want to learn more, go to Ben Winslow. He has a great Twitter feed. He saved my bacon today when I was sitting there sitting in committee listening. So.
Jim, you had interim this week. Amazon was in committee.
So there's
Amazon's coming in a big way.
Champagne,
1,200 jobs.
Champagne bottles, you know, the corks flying, everybody's high-fiving, everybody's excited. 1,200 jobs for Salt Lake. Who couldn't be happy? Well, DeBacchus isn't happy. I'm not happy.
This reminds me of when Carl Malone would say, you know, Carl's not happy. I mean, it's...
Yeah, DeBacchus isn't happy.
George Costanza used to talk in third person.
Yeah. George is upset.
Yeah, Carl would be interviewed and he'd say, Carl doesn't like that. And it's like, you know, say I don't like it, but you can say DeBacchus doesn't like it.
DeBacchus didn't like it. You know, and everybody else is all happy. Look, giving millions, where are the free enterprise people in the Utah legislature? Giving millions and millions of dollars to Jeff Bezos, whose net worth goes up $250 million a month over the last 20 years, guess what? He was going to bring that thing here anyway. So if he wants to come, fine. Free enterprise says let him come. But no, the state is there. The city is there. They are bankrolling. They're throwing cash at him. Are they Adobe jobs? Are they $70,000 a year plus benefits? No. What is the state taxpayers? What have we all chipped in to help Mr. Bezos with? Create 1,200 jobs that pay $12.50 an hour. They said that kind of quietly today. $12.50 an
Dan,
hour.
Dan, do you want to rebut this?
Wait. You live in Salt Lake City. You try getting a house for $12.50 an hour. If he wants to come, fine, come. But I don't know why taxpayers that are working their butts off should be paying Jeff Bezos and all of that money so the legislature could say, yeah, look, we brought Amazon to town. Yeah, you brought them to town, and they're creating nothing jobs with no future, and people can't even pay to live on $12.50 an hour. That's $2,000 a month. Give me a break. If we're going to give incentives, let's give them for decent jobs.
Dan, do you want to rebut? We've only got a couple of minutes.
I don't.
Well, I mean, I'll step up and just say, what will I say? I'll say these are not jobs that are intended to buy homes. These are for entry level. These are for young people. These are for people that are – they have a great training program. I mean, you have to look at it in the totality of what Amazon brings to this community. And the greatest benefit is they connect us to the global supply chain in a tighter way, and it will bring a lot other manufacturing, other jobs to our state.
They're coming anyway, I would make the argument. And to give millions of dollars to them to create these jobs is a money down the toilet.
Dan, we got to go to you to gripes. We're almost out of time.
Oh, man. I got to stop.
You don't have to. You want me to jump first?
So, no, I have my gripe. The idea that some people, you know, you heard the saying, people get 15 minutes of fame, right? Some people just make that 14th minute take forever. And Omarosa is just riding that thing as long as she possibly can. Soon she will be irrelevant.
I have a feeling that there's some juicy tape still to come. Just a gut feel.
He will survive this like he has everything
else. I know.
Shame on you, Washington County.
Oh, no.
He's going down south, going to Dixie.
You took out of your entire library system a little display on pride because you said it hurt family standards. Well, what about all the kids in Washington County who are gay? What kind of a homophobic message are you sending to them? You want to stop suicides, Washington County? Get up to the plate and grow up.
And I will share my gripe next week. I want to thank Emily Means for producing the program. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with Dan McCain, Jim DeMacis. Thanks for listening.